This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast featuring feminist thriller writers in conversation about women who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Kristen LaBianca, and I'm here with Lane Fargo.
Hello.
And Wendy Hurd.
Hello.
So we can all agree that we are like living in an utter hellscape, but yes. Let's take this wonderful opportunity of being together to talk about a positive thing that has happened recently. Lane, you want to kick that off?
Sure. So my positive thing is that last week at the time that we're recording this, I went on a solo writing retreat at a bed and breakfast here in Chicago. So it's a little staycation where I did not have to see or speak to my partner for 2 days.
That's magical.
It was magical. This place was so cute. It's called the Publishing House Bed and Breakfast. It's in the West Loop neighborhood of Chicago, which if people aren't familiar, it's like where all the fancy restaurants and stuff are. And it was just lovely. It's like kind of literary themed. Like all the rooms are named after authors and there are books in every room. It was just like blissful. They had a clawfoot tub and a steam shower and this like giant comfy bed, and the best part of this entire experience, the owner has two pet pugs who befriend everyone who stays there. It was the best.
That's amazing.
I basically want to live there now. It was like a little hard for me to leave, if I'm being honest, and I got a lot of work done. It was best decision ever, just to like take a little break in the middle of all of this. What about y'all?
Well, I had my release party for my new book, Once You Go This Far, not too long ago. And I did it on Crowdcast with author Mindy Mejia, who's been on the podcast before. And it was lovely. We also were joined by Allison Ryan, who's an audiobook narrator who's actually worked on both Mindy's and my books.
Oh, cool.
So that was kind of a fun connection. And we just talked about like audiobook publishing and how all that works. And then Allison performed the first chapter of the new book, which was like so cool for me to hear it being read in a theatric way, I guess. Like, because usually when I do events, I'll do a reading from the first chapter and like I feel like I'm okay at it, but like this was amazing. It was so cool. And we had go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that was just a really fun event. It was one of my favorite virtual events that I've been to during this.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. It was really fun. And it was like, I didn't want it to be like, this is another two people talking on Zoom kind of thing. So like, I was really excited to have the two guests and it was just a lot of fun. We had like almost 100 people who had signed into it and it was really nice. And I felt very special.
Her voice sounds just like how I imagine.
Yes. She's
I was like,
so
that is
good.
Uncanny.
Yeah, she has the perfect voice for the series, and she does such a good job, and I'm just really happy that she was willing to participate, so that was super fun. Wendy, how about you?
So I was on a real social media hiatus. Like, I did not do social media for 2 weeks, and because I've been writing two different books at the same time, I'm doing this thing where I'm trying to be in first draft for both projects at once instead of going through one and then the other. And it's working really well, but I was like, I need some more bandwidth, you know, and everything's so crazy. So it was really nice. And during that time, I got into the habit where my mom and I have been meeting every Sunday at 6:30 at a hiking trail, but like a hiking trail that we normally don't go to because too much traffic, it's a little farther or gets really crowded. So we've been going earlier in the morning and we've been getting like a nice like 2 or 3 hour hike in every weekend. And I'm really out of the loop now because of social media. I haven't been seeing what's going on. But I went back like from my hiatus and I realized Yeah, I don't like it that much. Like, I feel way better without it. Like, I felt so much more peace. I don't know what's going on. I keep missing, like, virtual events and stuff. But my day job has me on 7 hours of Zooms a day sometimes. Like, I'm not really... I can't go to virtual events that much right now. Like, it's been too... It's too many screens. Like, I can't be on Zoom that much. So, I'm like, do I really care about being out of the loop right now? I mean, I don't have a release this moment. I can still go on and like promote other people's books when things are coming out, but like, it's been nice.
It's interesting that you say that. That is how I too feel about social media, and I kind of try to just not be on it much in general for mental health purposes and also just being productive. But it's like, there's like this specific social media phenomenon where like something happens and like maybe you missed it and you just like you kind of see the tail end of it, and there's this moment where you kind of go like, I wonder what that is, should I look it up? And then you just decide like, no, I'm just not going to look it up. And then it just passes out of your consciousness and it's gone. Like,
wait, you can do that? You guys are blowing my mind right now.
It's just like, it's such a weird, there should be a name for that feeling of like, you're like aware of something, you don't know what it means, and you like make the conscious choice to like let it go into the scrap heap of history, which, you know, in social media world is like 2 days later,
like the latest scandal or whatever, like the latest scandal or the latest publishing drama or whatever, and you can just be like, well,
exactly,
I don't really need to know all the chisme.
But do we, how will we know which men to be mad at? Do we just have to be mad at all of them?
It's fine.
That sounds fine. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it is true at this point, you know, every time something comes out, you're like, I don't need to know all of them. I already assume all of them. Right.
You know? Easier to keep track of the men who are not garbage, because it's a much,
it
much,
is.
Shorter, much list. Shorter list. There's like 4 people on it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to try that. I am more attached to social media than ever, I feel, during the pandemic, because it feels like it's like where we're getting our news about how the world is on fire, but it doesn't really help. It's the doom scrolling, right? That's what they're calling it now.
Feeling anxious and like making the choice to like follow your anxious, obsessive thoughts, it feels like you're doing something, but you're not. You're just wearing yourself out emotionally. Like, worrying is not problem solving. Like, social media is not helping anything.
Make some bold statements today, ladies. These are things I need to hear, so I thank you.
Well, listen, I had to break up with my therapist right before the pandemic because she told me I was overreacting about it. So I had to become my own therapist.
Well, we're here today to talk about, speaking of women who are unlikable,
as we always are,
other woman.
Yes, ooh. The other woman, that is our topic today. So, mistresses, and I don't know, I feel like this could have a couple different meanings, but that's usually what we think of, are like mistresses. Yes.
One thing that I think we should talk about immediately is how, like, so when you say the other woman, everyone knows exactly the type of person you're talking about. There is no expression for the other man. There's just not, like, he's just like a man.
That is, but a good point.
But in Spanish, you hear Sancho a lot. Like, you say that, like, it's a very commonly used word, and I hear as much, like, there's not like a word in English that's like such a good equivalent.
Interesting.
The mister.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we say side piece about men? Do we say that?
Oh, really?
No, we don't.
We say pool boy.
Yeah, but that's sort of like that still like puts the responsibility on the woman here. Like, the pool boy is innocent, the other woman is devious.
The pool boy is younger, and the cougar is like, he can't help it. I mean, he's
right, he's,
the penis must go where it is called.
Yeah, I mean, that is like, I'm sure we're going to talk about this from a couple different angles, but I mean, the whole issue of the other woman, like blaming the woman in a relationship that involves infidelity when, like, we're talking about, I mean, sometimes both parties are married, but typically we're talking about a man who is married having an affair outside of his marriage. And like, he's the one who's lying and breaking vows and being a dick, but we blame the other woman.
Right. Yeah. And we don't have an expression for the other man in the case of like a woman having an affair, but we also don't have a term for that lying, cheating husband. He's just the husband.
Mm-hmm. Just a dick.
Yeah, he's just a dick.
I guess we'll say cheater.
Yeah. Or that's like gender neutral, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings about this one because my dad had an affair with his 25-year-old secretary when I was a kid. Mm. You know, real cliche shit. And I think, like, I don't know. I certainly blamed him primarily. Like, but I'm sure that I blamed her as well, you know, because I was like 12 or something. So I didn't understand. She was like this devious lady who was like stealing my father away. Right. Now I'm like, you can keep him. Yeah. Although she dumped him a few years later. So, you know, but it's funny because, like, as I got closer to her age, like, 25 is so young. Like, I can't, I don't know. I mean,
like, you're not a person yet. Like, you're not a person until you're at least 27. Like, I firmly believe that.
But yeah, I've kind of had a lot of, like, some, like, an archetype that I've thought about from a very young age because of that situation in my life. And now, as an older person, I, like, 100% blame my dad. Like, it was completely his fault, and he's an asshole. And if we could come up with a term for men like that, like, I would apply it to him. He also he tried to argue that it was okay that he was having this affair because it was God's plan for him to be with her.
What?
It was God's plan, you guys. Like, what could he do?
Well, there's stuff in the Bible, you know? I mean, there's, like, a lot of religious pieces to this, too, and communities all over the world, you know, about, like, you know, it's a thing. It's a thing.
What, that you, like, have to keep the man satisfied or he'll look elsewhere?
Correct.
Or, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's just, it's like there's an inevitability, too, and a shame on the woman where she just gets too old. You know what I mean? And, like,
right.
At some point, I mean, yeah.
At the age of 38, as we learned from
AJ Finn. Oh, from AJ Finn. Thank you. Yes.
Her. That's the moment when you turn decrepit.
And her rippling cellulite and veins.
The day before your 38th birthday is your last fuckable day.
Yeah. Last fuckable day. I remember that.
You remember that day?
I remember that. I remember my last fuckable day. It's coming up for you, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Soon. Enjoy it. Enjoy your fuckability right now.
No, I don't want it.
Want to be left alone. Thank you very much.
I do. Like, I'm like looking forward to my last fuckable day, honestly. Like, it sounds great. It sounds very peaceful. Just, I keep, since I'm growing out my gray hair, I keep making jokes about, like, wanting to be a crone. And I had someone on Instagram was like, oh, you'll never be a crone. Like, you're beautiful. And I'm like, no, I want to be a crone. Like, this is my goal in life. Like, please don't. It's all I want.
It does sound quite liberating to just embrace it and embrace the darkness.
Yes. Yes. All right. So what are some examples of the other woman that we should talk about?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention, especially right now, because there was this review written by Lori Moore that came out recently. Did either of you follow that? The whole so Lori Moore is a sort of mainstream literary fiction author, primarily short stories from the 90s. And she wrote a review of the book and the TV show Normal People, which I haven't read or watched, so I can only come at this from the point of view of loving Lori Moore as one of the writers that made me want to become a writer. So she published that this week, and it was like basically a savage takedown of millennials in general. and I'm not 100% sure that it wasn't satire. It was like far too smart for me to understand. Because she's really brilliant. But I bring that up because Lori Moore has a short story in the first collection that she wrote, and it's called How to Be an Other Woman.
Oh, ooh. Nice.
And this, it's in the book Self-Help, and it's a whole collection written in second person because, like, that's who Lori Moore is. She just doesn't care. And it is so interesting because it's from the point of view of the mistress, and it's actually like thoughts about being a mistress, which I feel like gives an agency to that person that we usually see the other woman as the villain of someone else's story. Mm-hmm. But this story is her story, and it's like specifically about the affair that she's having and her thoughts about it. And it's really, really lovely. And I would like to read a short passage to you.
Yay.
When you were six, you thought mistress meant to put your shoes on the wrong feet. Now you are older and know it can mean many things, but essentially it means to put your shoes on the wrong feet. You walk differently. In store windows, you don't recognize yourself. You are another woman, some crazy interior display lady in glasses, stumbling frantic and preoccupied through the mannequins. In public restrooms, you sit dangerously flat against the toilet seat, a strange flesh sundae of despair and exhilaration, murmuring into your bluing thighs, "Hello, I'm Charlene. I'm a mistress." And so this is something that I have loved this collection since I was like 13 years old. So I feel like that says a lot about like the types of stories that I always like to read. But I think it's just such an interesting take on it, because in this version of the story, the other woman is not blamed at all. She's mm-hmm. like she blames herself somewhat, but it's more like it's more a story about what happens and how she feels. It's not the blame is not the point, I guess. And so I think mm-hmm. it's an interesting counterpoint to a lot of what we see in this archetype.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never read anything by her. I need to rectify that.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing. This whole review thing with Normal People that came out this week, like it was very weird to see, like, oh no, there's a Lori Moore scandal on Twitter now. Like, what's happening? People were very upset. But again, I'm not totally sure that it wasn't satire. It's sort of hard to say.
Interesting.
She has always had a very like acerbic and direct arch way of looking at the world, which I think is really interesting.
See, I'm on Twitter all the time and I miss the scandal. So even if you're on there every day, you can't possibly keep up with all the drama.
You can't catch all the scandals no matter what you do.
No. You have a full-time job and then some. Well, an example that I thought would be interesting to discuss is the musical Hamilton, which is now streaming. Have either of you watched it?
Yes.
Yeah. So I just watched it with, I had seen the show when it was in Chicago. I listened to the cast recording like a million times. And then I watched the filmed version with some friends the other night. And I just kept thinking that like all of these women that Hamilton is involved in are like all too good for him. Like all of them. That's what I was sitting there. Because there's obviously, so he's married to Eliza, and then he has an affair with a woman named Mariah Reynolds, and it's sort of his like political ruination. Mm-hmm. And then he also has an emotional affair, I would say, with Eliza's sister Angelica, like throughout mm-hmm. his entire life. They're writing these like kind of sexy letters to each other. So both Angelica and Mariah are like presented as the other woman, sort of. Mariah is presented as this like temptress. She's like all in red with red lipstick. She's like super hot and sultry, and like
what she's the sultry alto voice that she sings in. Like, she's very seductive, and even the lyrics in the song, like, you know, he was helpless. What could he possibly do to avoid this beautiful temptress before him?
Yeah, the lyrics are all like, how do I say no to this? And it's like, you just say no and don't fuck her. Like, what? What's wrong with you? But I think Angelica is presented in a really interesting way, because she's like a very sympathetic character. Like, we love Angelica. She's my favorite, I would say. But they are absolutely having an emotional affair, like, the entire time that he's married to her sister. Like, she actually meets him first and has feelings for him too, but kind of steps aside for her sister. But they just carry on this. It's like presented as not so much an affair, but this like meeting of the minds. Like, they're sort of soulmates intellectually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where with Mariah, it's like all physical, and he just couldn't help himself. But yeah, I watching it, I'm just like, all of you are too good for him. Like, every single one of you. I love that musical, but like the character of Hamilton in that musical, he is a dumbass. He just does like stupid things over and over. Like, I just want to smack him.
Yes, I definitely agree that like Angelica is presented as very sympathetic and like a stronger, more distinct personality than Eliza.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really see much personality at all of Mariah other than sultry singing red dress and walking like around in a him. Circle. Yeah.
Like, good. Get his money. she's a hero. But probably one of the best moments in the show, though, is like after he has the affair and everyone's finding out about it and Angelica comes back and he's like, oh, thank God you're here. And she's like, I'm not here for you. I'm here for my sister. Like, fuck off, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, her loyalty is like, even though she has feelings for him and they have this emotional affair, like her primary loyalty is always to her sister, like no matter what, which makes her kind of an interesting other woman.
Well, and I guess one thing that I like about the whole dynamic, too, is like Hamilton does have to suffer the consequences of his shittiness in this case. Well, not all men do, but his political aspirations are effectively over after that, after the whole affair comes out. I mean,
well,
after
he brings
it out.
Tells everyone like an idiot.
he is an idiot.
That's one of my favorite parts of the musical when Burr and Jefferson are just like, what are you doing? Yes. That whole sequence.
Yeah, the Reynolds pamphlet side. Is like an amazing section of the show. I mean, the whole show is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's true. He suffers consequences and it like very much establishes that this is all of his own making. Like the affair is his fault. The Reynolds pamphlet is his fault. Like he fucked up multiple times and he just kept kind of like digging himself in. Like we're not, even though Mariah Reynolds is presented as this temptress and like isn't a very complex character, I don't get the sense that we're supposed to blame her so much. Like the musical really presents it as his fault.
Right.
And his
mistake. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm kind of fascinated with mistresses that are psychos, like the psycho mistress, like the Fatal Attraction mistress, or that movie Obsessed, or also I would argue Alex from Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, she can go lean that way a little bit, yeah.
I find this idea fascinating that you have a man who falls into the clutches. Anytime you have a man who falls into the clutches, I'm sort of like, interesting. So you have a grown man who's usually in a powerful position, like... He's a lawyer, right? Like he's a businessman. And then that means he's real smart. And then like, you know, he's got a wife. His wife is nice. You know, she's a nice person. She didn't do anything wrong. But then he falls into the clutches. And here comes Psycho Bitch who just like, it's almost like the witch archetype. Or like she casts like a spell on him. And then when he, as the nice guy who could not help but to just do her, but he didn't mean anything by it, and now he's going to go back to his wife, right? Because his wife is nice and pretty and young. Then the psycho bitch is going to do her thing. She's gonna boil rabbits. She's going to stalk him. And now it's a thriller. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And this idea that we have that this is like a thing, like that, she has the power to ruin everything for him. She's going to burn his whole world down.
He just made one mistake with his penis. Like
just one tiny mistake. And now he's like, he's the hero of the story because she's
the main
psycho.
Character.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I find that so interesting because it's like, in no way is he like really responsible. Like we feel bad for him. Like, we feel like, God, you know, yeah, I mean, it was fun for a second. You see how we got into this, you know?
I don't feel bad for him.
The audience, I think that's the
No, I think we're supposed to, but maybe it's because of my, like, personal experience with this. I'm just like, fuck you, man. You deserve to have your life burned down. I'm just vindictive about it. But no, you're totally right. Like, from a narrative perspective, we're supposed to sympathize with this man who made the one tiny penis mistake.
The penis just goes where it is called. It cannot be held responsible for what pulls it.
Have you, either of you read The Arrangement by Robin Harding?
Mm-mm. No.
So this is a thriller. I think it came out last year and it is about a young woman who is a sugar baby.
Okay.
And it's interesting because it kind of plays with this psycho bitch aspect of the other woman, because it starts out like she's in this transactional relationship to pay for art school, and then she starts kind of falling for the guy and becomes like clingy and everything, and then tragedy occurs. I don't want to like spoil anything, but there's you know, shit gets really bad, and you're kind of questioning like, is she a psycho? Did she like hurt someone? Did mm-hmm. she? And she's kind of questioning this about herself too. Like she's presented as a sympathetic character, I would say, like someone who makes a lot of mistakes, but she is the protagonist and we're supposed to care what happens to her. And I mean, I totally did, because she's young, like she kind of got in over her head. Like I'm definitely on her side as I'm reading this. But one of the most interesting aspects to me of this book was, again, no spoilers, but his wife is a character in the book, and she is like remarkably kind of understanding towards the mistress. I can't really explain fully without spoiling how the book ends, but I was like impressed with how it was handled. It was like very nuanced that his wife kind of understood what had been going on and wasn't like, this whore stole my husband. Like she had a little more nuance and compassion for this young woman.
So is it like compassion because she understands that her husband is a dick, or is it just sort of like she is understanding of the husband's actions?
She's more understanding of like the young woman and how she got involved in this, and that like her life shouldn't be ruined by this like youthful mistake. So it's kind of an interesting take on it. And yeah, refreshing. Like also because the husband was a dick, not so much sympathy for the husband, but for the,
okay,
for
got the mistress. It. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's a really fun book. It's like one of those perfect beach reads that you can just like flip through in an afternoon. I loved it.
I just ordered it while we were talking.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get on that. That sounds nice. Like exactly what I need right now.
It is like audiobook. Delightfully trashy. That's my, and I say that as a complete compliment. I love a like trashy thriller. That's my favorite thing. And it is the perfect example.
Yeah, I think apart from the man's, you know, the lack of responsibility given to the man in these situations, that's obviously maddening for us female writers and readers and listeners and everything. I think it's really interesting, this idea of women, like the motivations behind going quote unquote psycho, you know what I mean? Like there's like, I think there's an interesting like powerlessness written into these characters where there's almost an interesting nuance given to these characters. It's like, first I felt like I had you, and then I felt like rebuked or like rejected by you. And then because I was powerless, the only thing I had left to do was to hurt you. And the only best way I could think of was to hurt you was to destroy this thing you're leaving me for. So there's actually like some interesting motivation on their end. If you mm-hmm. can look at the story from their perspective, there's a lot more nuanced motivation on that end than from the male character who yes. really has nothing to him except just, I felt like fucking her, so I fucked her. And oops. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's not, so I'm always interested, like, but they're, the mistress is never the main character.
Yeah, very rarely is the mistress the main character. It's like the we see it from the man's point of view, like in the case of the boiled rabbits in Fatal Attraction, mm-hmm. or you know, the long-suffering wife's point of view, which mm-hmm. is also generally not complimentary of the mistress. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's to just sort of put it in the perspective of the other woman is like, it's somewhat of a refreshing take on it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a couple examples where the mistress is the main character in like various okay. contexts. So Meredith on Grey's Anatomy, she oh, right. is,
but she's not really the mistress.
Well, he's married. She doesn't know. That's why like, know we it. Have sympathy for her, because she doesn't yeah. know at first. But then she continues to sleep with him. So I think that's interesting.
He's it's married, like, well, but she's getting know. Divorced. They're separated. It's different.
I don't know. Why didn't you tell her?
Okay.
The book Love and Other Impossible Pursuits by Ayelet Waldman. Have either of you read that?
Mm-mm. No.
So that book, the main character is, she's like a mistress turned wife. Like it's after she has, the guy has left his previous wife and married her. And the book is sort of about her trying to bond with her young stepson, who is like very wary of her. And she's presented, I think, in a really sympathetic light, where like she feels bad about breaking up their marriage, but she really loved the guy. Like, there's a lot of you're seeing it from her point of view. But I know when that book came out, which I forget when it was like years ago, I saw reviews of it that were like, I can't stand this character, what a selfish bitch. Like, people didn't necessarily, like, even though the book was trying to get us to empathize with her, and I did when I read it, like, a lot of people read it and were just like, what a bitch.
Well, it's interesting, the idea of, like, the other woman turned into the main woman, you know? Like,
yeah,
the woman who was the mistress and becomes the wife, and now it's sort of like the tables are slightly turned, and now she's in a totally different position. That's definitely some interesting storytelling possibilities there.
That's also on the show Fosse Verdon. I just watched that. I don't know if you guys have seen that, about Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. It's the same, like, at the beginning he's married, she's the other woman, they get married, then he like cheats on her a bunch. It's like this cycle, like, once you become, if you were the mistress and you become the wife, like, you can never relax because, like, you know, he's a cheater, he's gonna do it again,
right?
But my other, probably my favorite thing in which the other woman, she's not technically a mistress, I guess, but like the other woman is the main character, is My Best Friend's Wedding. Because she is devious. She is devious. Going in to break up their relationship. Like, that is her plan.
Yes.
And she's like an amazing, unlikable female character. I mean, she's really pretty awful. Yeah, that was pretty good. I love that movie.
I haven't seen that movie in so long. That's so... You're so right, though. Like, she really, like, she is the one we're supposed to be rooting for, but she's pretty terrible.
Well, there was a Twitter discussion going on a couple months ago that was about, like, how Jules is the real villain of My Best Friend's Wedding. And I'm like, that's kind of true. Like, you can't really argue against that. She's not likable. She is very selfish. And I'm also like, you guys are fighting over Dermot Mulroney. Right. Like, what? Like, Julia Roberts and Cameron Diaz, like, right. Can both do better.
Yes.
Like, just any other man, like, I don't understand. He's just kind of an idiot, too. He's, like, this, like, sports bro, like, kind of, yeah. I don't understand what either of them sees in him, quite frankly. I think that is also a lot of these male characters. I'm just like, why are these women both wanting them or fighting over them? Like, in Gone Girl, too, like, Amy and Nick's having the affair with the, like, college girl and everything, right. And I'm just like... Both of you, like, just, he's such an idiot. Like,
you can do so much better. Just don't. Yeah. But, like, that's something interesting, too. Like, that at the heart of these stories, this man with the wandering penis and also, like, a dumb brain. Like, he's not good enough for either of these people. And yet they're, like, sort of fighting over him. And it's, like, the source of such... Like, so much dramatic tension in storytelling is from that specific jealousy. And it's, like, so often it's just like, but why?
Mm-hmm. Except in Obsessed, because Idris Elba, I mean.
That's really? Fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
We can all fight over him. He's worth it. But, like, Ben Affleck, not worth it.
No.
Dermot Mulroney, no.
No.
Patrick Dempsey, definitely not.
No.
Dermot.
The Girl on the Train is a story that's all about other women in
that book. I know everyone doesn't love that book, but I love that book.
I do. I love that book.
Every time I say I like that book, someone's like, I didn't like it. It's all the hype. I'm like, well, I liked it.
People like to be contrary about things that are popular, and I don't.
That's true.
Just like,
that's true.
Whatever. Let people like what they like. It doesn't matter.
Like, also with thrillers, there's so often, it's like, if you can predict who the villain is, then people think it's a bad thriller. And I'm like, not necessarily. Not like, necessarily. I definitely predicted that one before the end, but I still completely enjoyed every page of it. So,
well, yeah, it's like, it's not always about who, but like, why. The why is so much more interesting than who anyway.
Or just how the story is told. Like, exactly. The ride, going on the ride of it. Like, that was a book where I was just, like, so in for the whole ride. I love the timeline. I guess I love weird timeline things where you have, like, catching up in the secondary POV. Mm-hmm. I loved what she did with the, like, faked you out with that one thing she did. That was amazing. And I love that main character. I know she's awful. I love her. She's terrible.
And that's one where the, like, former wife and the mistress slash new wife kind of like join forces at the end.
Yeah.
In a cool way, even though they're not like friends. They don't have to be friends, but they can join forces.
Yes. Love it.
Yeah. And just the way she felt at like having her life stolen by this other woman.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and how it felt to be that like discarded person. I was like,
yeah,
so well written.
But it really, that book, you have sympathy for all of the characters, like the current wife, the current mistress, the ex-wife, that like you, it really makes them all full humans who are worthy of our sympathy. It's not, they're not just the other woman or just, I really like that book a lot.
Well, the mistress was kind of like in her POVs, she was like remembering when they were getting together when he was still married, and she was doing it in a very unsympathetic way. So the fact that she was able to be like, yeah, I remember doing this, this, you know, this lady didn't deserve him, I'm taking him from her, like she was full on like not nice, and then you still felt sympathy for that character just because she was a whole human being, like you said. And she didn't deserve to die, you know. You were like, okay, well, she was kind of a bitch, but like whatever, like, you know, she was still like, I don't know.
That's interesting, like the level of blame that will kind of, like, another example I wanted to bring up actually was Beck in You, that she is, I mean, she's like the other woman, she's like sleeping with her married psychiatrist. And I've seen a lot of, because you know how people want to, like, including you, Wendy, want to defend Joe from You and say, I've seen you defend him.
I hate Beck so much. I'm like, whoever needs to kill Beck, I don't care if it's Joe, whoever needs to do it, let's just
but make it why happen. I don't understand all of the hate for Beck. Like, this is what's interesting to me, because like, yeah, she's kind of an asshole and she like sleeps with her married shrink and whatever, but like that's the kind of thing that people have used as an argument for like she's terrible and deserves to die because she's like kind of a selfish bitch and like slept with a married man. Like, I don't think those are like capital offenses, you know.
I don't care about a mistake, I'm like, I'm all about it. It's more just like I just hated her personality. I hated her personality so much, and the weird thing was I felt like her personality like was a stand-in for a whole culture, you know what I mean? Like, I felt like the author took the douchiest parts of this culture that this character was in and like assigned them to a human being, you know. It was more of like her writing stuff and her poetry readings and like her MFA douchiness and like her self-righteousness. Like, it was that I hated her so much for.
I think she was like triggering your Jenny Schechter.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I haven't read or watched You, but it definitely sounds like a Jenny Schechter
exactly
mood. I would also like to mention the show Mad Men, which is like, I feel like there's something to talk about regarding Mad Men for just everything in this world.
Yep.
But
yeah, you really can.
There are many, many mistresses on Mad Men. Many, many, for many characters. But I would like to shout out, in the first season, Don Draper has the affair with Midge.
She's the best.
She's the best. And she has this line where she says, I don't make plans and I don't make breakfast. And I just think...
Iconic.
And like in so many of these depictions, like there's a wife who there's nothing wrong with her. She's perfectly nice and probably attractive and a good mom, or not in the case of Betty Draper, but a functioning human being. But then there's like this breezy, refreshing other woman who is like so different than that boring wife that you married because you thought you had to settle down in a specific way. And then you meet this whirlwind of a person, which I think is, I think that's a very interesting dynamic. I don't know how true to life all of that is, but I definitely am on Team Midge.
That's interesting, because on Mad Men, almost all of the main female characters are like someone's mistress at some point in time.
Yes.
So it really is like, it kind of, we can't just categorize the women on that show into like, these are the like good, nice wives and these are the like evil, slutty mistresses.
Yeah,
like
it's
all
true.
The women are play both of those roles at various times.
Yeah.
And all of the men are dirtbags constantly. They just...
So I keep thinking that like being a mistress, I'm wondering if there's like a resentment for that person, because there's a certain amount of like resentment for a woman who's like not tied down. Mm-hmm. Like she's not gotten married. She's not bought into the things. She's living sort of a free, willing lifestyle.
Well, or like that is true. Could also be she's like doing what she wants the way a man does.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
She's not being an obedient example of her type. She's not settled down with the kids in the house and the kitchen appliances. Like, she is living her life the way she wants to. She is unruly, and that automatically makes her like that's one of those characteristics that automatically get you labeled as unlikable. You're doing what you want to do, not what's expected of you.
That's very true. I think that plays out in Jennifer Hillier's book, Little Secrets.
So we'll be talking to Jenny Hillier in a couple weeks about her book, Little Secrets, and the secondary point of view, which is the mistress.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun. That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.